Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. Today we have our guest. Our guest today is Tyron Dixon. Tyron is a relationship coach at Arose Through Concrete Consulting. He is also a host of the Quality of Love podcast, which can be found on Spotify and other links that I would post on the show notes. And so Tyron have Buzzsprouts, Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube channels, and I'll post all of those things at the show notes. So Tyron has a super great content that I would implore you to go check out, because I did check them out and they're very interesting and juicy, especially when it comes to relationships and how we can navigate through that exciting but difficult human interactions that we have on day to day. So welcome to the show, Tyron. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. It's actually been a little while since I've been on an interview, so I appreciate you taking the time out to let me on your show, and also that lovely shout out, man. I appreciate all of that.
Yeah, totally. I've noticed that you have guests. It's kind of like when you're the photographer, you're always shooting people, and, yeah. And then when you're behind the cam, it's like, oh.
It's a whole different world too. And it's like, it's funny, when I'm interviewing, I don't typically like feel any nerves, but when I get interviewed, it's like, okay, all right, I gotta make sure everything's together.
Right, I feel you. So tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
My name is Tyron Dixon. As explained, I have been a relationship coach for going on about 6 years now. Prior to that, I worked as a life coach slash, at the time it was called a youth development professional. And this kind of led into me starting Arose Through Concrete Consulting. So I work with adolescent young men and women, the ages from about 12 to about 18 in an agency, a residential agency. So the kids would come in, they'd spend anywhere from 6 months to a year with us in the program, getting structure, learning routines, learning skill sets. And then the kids would end up getting sent back home to their parents or to their guardians or whoever they stayed with. And literally from the moment I stepped on that campus to about 12 months in, every kid that we sent home either got in trouble again or got in worse trouble than they did when they came into our program. So after a while, I'm like, man, this is, whatever we're doing, it's not working, right? It's not set up for a long-term successful plan. So I started to look into life coaching and the additional things that I could do in order to help kids to create more sustainable skills to be successful in their lives. And I started Arose Through Concrete Consulting. And here we are 6 years later. I've been able to do some magnificent things. I've been able to connect with some magnificent people. And that actually branched off into the Quality of Love podcast, which I have as well. Currently, we're over about 26,000 total downloads in the 2 year time span. So I've been busy doing a lot. But I have to say, to answer your question, the thing that brings me most joy is fatherhood, man. I love being a dad. I have two beautiful daughters that I could not see myself doing anything without. So that's where my ultimate joy comes into play.
That's wonderful. I have read The Book of Joy by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama, and I also experiencing it. It says, when you have true joy is when you service others. Yes. And obviously you're servicing your community and you're servicing your children because you have children. Yes. And I have noticed that a lot of parents, that's usually their number one joy they mention. And people who mm-hmm. do not have children, they usually mention servicing the community.
Yeah, so human very
interaction
true.
Is very important.
Yeah, I love that concept too. That servant leadership. I can't emphasize it enough. The more you do for people, the more buy-in you get from people, and the more buy-in you get from people, the more committed they are. Right. And it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing to see it all come together, especially in a time where, you know, it can be difficult to have relationships and solid relationships. So yeah, the joy definitely comes from the kids for mine.
Yeah. And when what you do unto others, you do unto yourself, people think that, yeah, you're doing something great, but then it gives you fulfillment, and you cannot do something that's not inside of you. So if you weren't a leader, if you weren't someone who takes pleasure in servicing other people, then you wouldn't do it. And if you did it for the sole purpose of money, then you wouldn't really last, because money is the outcome and not the pure joy.
Yes, man. Listen, you drop it. You dropping gems, man. That's usually something that I share on my show, where it's like, yeah, you... like, you have to, I believe, and this is, I'll keep my tangent very short, but I really do believe that the quality of your life is dependent upon the relationships that you have with other people, right? So tying into exactly what you're saying, it's when you're serving people and you're doing good by other people, you get that energy back into your world. And when it all comes together, you reach this kind of apex of just feeling like you're doing what you're supposed to do, or like most people call it, aligning with your purpose, right? That's the real sweet spot in life, where you're doing something you enjoy and it's also benefiting others in a positive way.
Definitely. And that's why you can tell the difference. At least I can tell the difference when someone is doing something. And of course, we all need money to eat and put a shelter over our heads, but we can tell the difference between someone who's doing it solely for the money and someone who's working and they're making money, but they're doing it from their heart.
Yeah.
The interaction is so different. Yeah.
Yes. Which, and in my work environment, that's where I really learned to decipher those things too. And where it was like, you really want to be mindful of the people that are there to just collect a paycheck or there to just get something out of a situation, and the people that really care about it. Because if you spend too much time and energy on the people that's just there to get a paycheck or get whatever they want out of a situation, that could suck your energy out.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So you explained a little why you got into coaching. So I wanted to ask if you can give us more details. Why relationship coach or coaching?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I keep hearing this word pivot, and I feel like I got to share it with your audience too. Pivoting is coming into a situation with one idea and thinking that things are going to go one way, and the ability to pivot is shifting from that focus onto another one that's typically more advantageous. So tying that into how I eventually became a relationship coach, my first year of life coaching. So I started off as a life coach. My first year of life coaching, every client that I had inevitably, like, it something tied back to their relationship. Either they were in an unhealthy relationship, or they needed to get more out of their partner, or their partner needed more out of them. So I always found myself coming back to, like, okay, we started off as life coaching, or with the idea of life coaching, but everything tends to tie back to relationships. So I said, you know what, this is kind of, I'm also very spiritual in terms of not only Bible reading, but spiritual in terms of just following my feelings and listening to that inner voice inside of me. So the inner voice was like, listen, everything is tying to relationships. So you need to look more into relationships or become a relationship coach. So after a while, I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And when I did it, my second year in coaching period, I started to see exponential growth in terms of money. And when I doubled down on the relationship stuff, more people started to get in contact with me. I was asked to speak at more speaking engagements. And I'm like, this is it. Like, this is where I should be. Also, to be frank with you, and I don't share this story too much, but you got a vibe, so I got to share this one with you. But I was legitimately the worst person ever in history that I know in relationships at a point in time. Like, all the way up until my late 20s, early 30s, I was very narcissistic, very self-centered, self-absorbed, just all about me and when it came to relationships. And I frankly hurt a lot of women as a result of that. And I decided to shift my mind over a long period of time. It certainly wasn't overnight. But once I shifted my mindset, I realized that life coaching, relationship coaching, it's just creating a shortcut for people. So what I did, or what I turned it into, is, okay, being a relationship coach to me means that I'm going to create a shortcut for you so you don't make the same mistakes that I made.
Mm. You know, it's fine that you mentioned what you just did mention, because I have come to the realization, it's like it's late in life, but it's never too late, that we're all human and we all F up and we all grow. Mm-hmm. None of us is born, well, we're born certain ways, but we have to basically either improve it or grow on like into it. And life is about growth. Like one of the things that when I'm looking for jobs, when they say, oh, you need to have 5 years of experience, and then they won't give you a job without experience. And I'm like, no one is born with that experience.
Yeah.
There's that first day in the job. So I get really frustrated with that, or even anything in life. And so it is okay if you were a narcissist, or I believe that after the age of 8 or 12, it's kind of like trees with rings. Mm-hmm. You can grow, but you're still going to have certain things that you used to be inside of you, but you need to work on those every day.
Yes,
just like I cannot say I took a shower on Monday and it's Friday and I'm good. You still have to work. You still have to do certain things. And we see it in everyday life. We have to work on ourselves, or else we're going to tend to go back. And as you do relationship coaching, you probably seen that phrase where usually the woman, but it can be either gender, where let's say the woman says she nags and she threatens to leave a relationship, and all of a sudden he's not changing. And then 2 weeks later, he goes back into it's because people feel comfortable. People just go back. Just like I got sick for like, I would say 14 days, really, because after 14, I got better like on the 10th day. But on the 14th, that's when I felt 100%. You know that feeling where you're like, I'm good.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, I had to, when people writing to me and they're like, oh, I'm so sad you're sick, whatever. And I'm like, you know what? It's humbling me. And I need to take that humbleness when I'm healthy, and the gratitude of being healthy. And because we don't remember when we're sick. We don't remember the bad times. We just go back to shitty times. So it's good that you are... Your work is keeping you with your growth and keeping you from going back to where we were. Yes,
absolutely.
And my podcast is about getting rid of shame, guilt, fear of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we have those things, but at the same time, doesn't need to define our past. Doesn't need to define us, but our past is important to have. Basically.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm happy you segue right into what like your podcast is about, because I had to mention this. It speaks to like what you're saying, everything that you're saying and what your podcast is about. It speaks to a growth mindset, right? You have to be someone who has a growth mindset. If not, you're going to stay in those pockets of shame and guilt and fear, which in society, they want us to stay in those pockets. That's how we don't grow and how we don't end up being successful. So that's dope, man, that you tie those things together, because at the end of the day, if you want to be successful, it's imperative that you have a growth mindset.
Certainly. And I want to remind people with that podcast, or even in my life, and I had to remind myself that in 2020, those things, it's kind of like, it's perpetuating, like you're going to feel shame for having shame. And it's like, you don't, shame doesn't need to be, what you are shameful of doesn't need to be your life, but you can be okay not feeling shameful about those things and say, you know what? I was an a-hole and I'm not part of it, but that was that. And I'm not ashamed about it anymore either. So
it's embracing it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's awesome. So which leads to the question I want to ask you. So how would someone or a couple watching your YouTube videos and listening to your podcast can get rid of shame, guilt, and fear that plagues their life?
I think that I start using, you probably listened to my fog episode on the podcast. And I think that when we talk about fog, is an acronym and it's short for fear, obligation, guilt, and then there's an additional one, shame. You have to acknowledge it, right? The first thing you have to do is acknowledge, just like you said, is acknowledge it. And a lot of us run from it. We run from it, we hide from it. So using an example that comes up quite a bit in my relationship coaching is cheating, right? So whether whichever partner cheats, it could be a man or a woman. What happens is they get into these pockets of guilt. So feeling guilty that they cheated, feeling shame that they cheated, and being fearful. And what it does is it forces you to kind of bog down or shut down what you have to do. And if you want your success or your relationship to be successful, excuse me, what you have to do is acknowledge these things and recognize that, yes, I cheated. But the deeper rooted thing behind that is why? What was the reasoning that you cheated? Right. So once you start having those type of conversations with your partner, that's where you're making progress in your relationship. Most people fear having those type of conversations, those deeper rooted conversations, which is simply acknowledging your needs to your partner, right? It's nothing wrong with telling your partner, I need this. Or at a point in time, like you said, this worked out for our relationship. So at a point in time, having sex on a regular basis, that was cool for our relationship. Now we have kids. Now we have jobs that are higher paying or more demanding. Those conversations around a lot of those fears and guilt and obligation is where you really have successful long-term relationships. When you don't have those conversations, that's where you stay trapped in those boxes of fear, obligation, and guilt. And eventually, when love leaves a relationship, I don't care how long you've been in a relationship. I don't care who it is in the relationship. It could be your grandmother. When love leaves a relationship, there's one thing that's built in its place when you're not getting your needs met. And that one thing is resentment, right? So what happens is people start to realize, okay, my needs aren't being met. I don't know how to articulate getting my needs met. So now I'm just mad at this person because they don't know. I've been in a relationship with them for so long and they don't know how to meet my needs, even though I'm not telling them what I actually need. Right. So you get caught in that circle. I don't know, man. It's crazy. You get caught in the cycle of fear, obligation, guilt, and shame. And the only way to get out of it is having a conversation with the partner.
Damn. Wow. I'm so excited for the rest of the interview because I've written certain things and as if you saw my notes.
Yeah, it's that the fog is real though. I must admit that like that is a barrier that a lot of people don't get over, and it causes you to feel resentment, man. And resentment is the worst thing that you can feel in a relationship, because when you start to feel resentment, you don't feel like you're in control, and the less control you feel like you have over your life, the more pissed off you get.
Yes. And resentment is a cancer that'll eat you away. And the funny thing is, well, not funny, but you'll have resentment and it'll piss you off more when your partner is blissful and have no idea what's going on.
Yes.
And then you're just rotting and dying by yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it will create all kind of emotional disease within you while the other person have no clue.
No clue at all. It's funny. Oh man, you get me excited, man. I love this type of conversation. Like just growth conversations in general. I love them. But I always say it's like drinking poison and expecting your partner to feel the results of the poison. Like, no, you're going to feel that. Well, like you said, they're unassuming. They don't know what's going on because you haven't told them. And we're all our own individual person. So if you didn't tell me something, I'm sorry if I missed out on it.
Yeah,
but you can't necessarily blame them for that because you didn't speak up.
So communication is key. However, I saw, I don't remember exactly the meme, but it says communication is key. But however, a lot of people haven't seen that rest of the, I don't know if you've seen it, you can tell me. Communication is key. However, if that person is not able to understand what you communicate, where do we go from there?
Yes.
Have you encountered that?
Yes, a lot, actually. That's one of my recent clients had that issue where it's like, I'm communicating, but it's not like they're receiving what I'm communicating. And I blame the communicator for that though, right? It's on you. It's completely
shit.
And people that same reaction that you just gave me is the reaction that people give me, like, why? How could it be my? No, it's your fault
because
you're not articulating. You're not articulating in a way for that person to understand. So somehow you need to figure out a way to articulate what you need and what you need to say in a way that's going to get them to understand. And how you do it, it's really simple once you master the technique, but it's active listening, really, is what it is. It's you're communicating something, right? So it's, I need this. If they don't come back and say, okay, I can do this, then you need to elaborate on that. You have to say, okay, I need this. Are you able to get it? oh, okay, you're not able to get it for me, or you're not able to meet this need for me, I can assist you, or here's how I can help you meet this need for me. And then you also got to realize that some people just don't get it. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
you
have some to make people just don't get it.
They just don't. And you, it's okay. Like, some people just don't get it. But when you realize that someone does not get it, you got to understand where that relationship or where that communication lies, right? So it's, do I want to continue to communicate to this person because they clearly shown that they don't get it, or do I continue to work with them? And that's where I like to bring up unconditional acceptance, man. I speak unconditional acceptance a lot. And if it once I get to a point in a relationship where I'm trying to communicate something to you, you're not understanding it, and I get frustrated and I lose my patience with you, that relationship can't be the same, because I can't communicate with you the way I need to communicate with you, which if I don't cut the relationship off, or if you don't cut the relationship off, that's where you again start to feel resentment.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, what the fuck? Why this person don't get it? Like, but that's on you, man. You got to communicate for them to get it.
So I totally agree 100%, because I'm a clear communicator and I don't sugarcoat. I've been called raw or brisk. And sometimes, what's that word? Like, I didn't have empathy, and I used to fight that part, but then not until maybe 3 years ago that I've experienced empathy and I started applying it, and they weren't wrong. But of course, in the beginning, when you don't know something and you fight it, usually when you protest about something, it's usually true kind of thing. And then I had to embrace, yes, I am raw. Yes, I'm brisk. And I had to apply sweetness into my delivery and to meet people where they at, where they able to understand. Also, and I saw in your notes, actually, your very first episodes, you were talking about love language, and I had to learn about love language because that's a way of communicating. And one thing that you mentioned is funny, man, like how it takes someone to take your ego out to do this. Showing part, because two things that you mentioned, the showing part, how to do it or work with them, and the unconditional love or acceptance. And those, acceptance, when I took ego out of the equation, I was able to do it. But with ego, nah.
It's hard, man. It's hard. I be having to check my ego every day, literally. Like, it's a daily thing where I'm like, all right, is this an ego decision that I'm making now, or is this a logical decision? All right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's that ego, man. But you're right. You're spot on. Like, you're spot on with what you're saying. And it's the love language, one. And it's also the apology language, though, too, because people don't really, you know what I mean? Like, people, so when we communicate us personally, communicate with the intent, right? So when we say things and it comes across offensive, it's like, oh, we didn't mean to say that, or I didn't mean to say that, I didn't mean for it to come out that way. But when people communicate to us, we look at what they actually said, right? So if they said something offensive, we're like, oh, see, you're talking crap, or you're being disrespectful, and we don't give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, okay, maybe they didn't mean to say it that way. So that's something else that'll help. And then the last thing on communication, I have to say it, stop communicating so people can hear you. Communicate so people can feel you, right? When people feel you, they feel exactly what you're saying, they move. Right. Feelings get people moving. Hearing things, they're not going to move. They're not going to move based off of hearing thing. But when you can get a feeling and evoke emotion, then they will move.
And in a moment of silence, I'm stuck hitting in.
Yes, sir. You got to communicate so they feel you, not hear you.
Wow. Yes. So human interaction is a skill. Yes. And I think we need to learn that in school, definitely, because we wouldn't have, there's so many fights. I love watching Unsolved Mysteries or like those human things.
Yeah.
And a lot of actually violence is violence of passion, not because that mm-hmm. person was brewing to hate you. And no, it's like people who loved each other. And I'm like, what the hell? And understanding human interaction and psychology is because you didn't hate your wife. You just mm-hmm. have issues that you didn't work on, or communication. And you have that resentment. You blow up, you get excited or annoyed. And then if you don't know how to keep your hands to yourself, you strike somebody or you stab somebody. And then you go like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. And then mm-hmm. it's kind of too late. And some people, I saw a thing how I felt bad for the guy. I actually wanted to be a psychology or the person who studies, like, you know, like Silence of the Lambs. I love to learn a criminal mind. I can apply the empathy of, I go back when they're a child, or what the trauma that mm-hmm. caused that. A lot of people, as I said, as I watch, they're not, even that guy who's like cut up his wife and mm-hmm. buried her and everything. Mm-hmm. It was a crime of passion. And when it's too late and he's like, fuck, what do I do now? Then he goes further into the shenanigans mm-hmm. that he didn't plan on. And then everyone look at him like he was this stone cold murderer. But it's like, but no one is, just like with the active listening. Mm-hmm. When something's happening, or when someone is saying something, people don't go further in soaking in mm-hmm. what that person's mm-hmm. going through. They just make blanket based on their emotion, judging on that person. Well, first of all, that person did something bad. No one's mm-hmm. arguing that. However, feeling where that person's coming from, and still, like, even if that happened, you still can go to jail, definitely. Doesn't mean you won't. But at the same time, like, feeling where that person's coming from will even give you a sense of growth yourself, because then you'll understand people more. It's like what mm-hmm. you do to others, what you do to yourself. Like, you get to, because the empathy was a big thing for me. And once mm-hmm. I understand that, I do feel people, actually. Yeah, I need to learn how to talk to people so they can feel me, but I do feel people.
Because the other piece of it too is compassion. Empathy breeds compassion. Like, it's, those two things go hand in hand. So when you're practicing empathy, it's naturally you're building up your compassion muscle too. So it's like, mm-hmm. you can feel bad for other people, even though they, like you said, that gentleman, that's a terrible situation, but you can understand and be empathetic to him. Because I always say this to my clients, hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. So that gentleman that did that to his wife had an emotional reaction, because he's experienced a level of abuse that he's never been able to speak to someone about or to get help with. So he snapped. So people snap. You hear it, like you said, you hear it and see it all the time. People snap, go into these emotional states, kill someone, hurt someone. And then when they're back to baseline, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. But it's tough, man. Emotions they're the crux of a lot of the things that happen in the world, which is why I'm always preaching, man, sharpen your emotional intelligence. Yeah. That's one of the biggest things you could possibly do.
Yeah. I'm glad I've done that. Cause I was really shit for, like, I'll just say 18 years.
That's a long relationship.
Round it up. Yeah. Half of my life. So now I'm single. I'm working on myself more. I had to leave the relationship because I started learning who I was, and I was working on myself, and then I had to leave so I can know me, because I started young, in my 20s. So it's like, then you become that person, really. But that's another story.
It's tough, but I gotta shout you out, man, for breaking that barrier, man, because a lot of people stay in those relationships and they lose themselves.
I was 2 decades.
Man, like, in 20 years, that's a long time to just walk away from somebody.
Yeah,
so you know what I mean? That's how you see people that have been together for all that time and they're miserable, but they don't leave because they don't know who they are outside of their marriage.
Exactly. I didn't know who I was. So based on looking at your stuff, I had to ask this question. So is a two-parent household important? Why and how? And does it need to be a mother and a father, like, gender-wise? Mm-hmm. Or can it be the same sex parent household?
I think to answer your question, 100% unequivocally, if you can have a two-person household, that is what I would suggest and recommend. if you're able to work it out, right? And the only reason why I'm for two-parent households, and it could be either sex, it can be both women, both men, whatever, whatever it is, but for purposes of consistency, right? So the kid is getting the same message from mom and dad, dad and dad, mom and mom, whoever it is, they're getting the same exact message from both parents. What I've seen with kids, and I caution with saying manipulation, because kids are just being kids, right? When you are in separate households, kids are able to manipulate situations a little better, right? And that's where you see like a mom would feel resentment, because when the kids go over to dad's house, they get all of this extra stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they come home and they're expecting the same thing from mom. But what if mom can't afford it? Or what if mom doesn't have the money at that time? Now you've naturally allowed for resentment to be built in towards mom, right? And it's like, that's why the kid will say, oh, well, that's why I love staying at dad's house more. That's why I always want to be at dad's house, or I always want to be with the person that's giving me more or letting me have more fun with what it, which it really is. We all were kids at a point in time. So yes, that's why I would say that it's important, because what's happened when you're in a two-parent household is you're getting a consistent message. With that being said, I would never encourage anybody to be in a household in which they're miserable or their needs aren't being met, because a lot of people, quote unquote, suck it up for the kids, but they don't realize the kids see everything. Like, the kids see everything. And
yes, thank you.
I've worked with kids or adults who were kids, and they saw their parents arguing, and their parents didn't think they saw them arguing, right? So they would go behind closed doors and argue, yeah, or they would close the door and fight and get into to verbally abusive situations. And what the child didn't realize is that they subconsciously downloaded a lot of those behaviors into their mind. And now they're adults and they're hitting their wives or they're hitting on their husbands, because they've picked up a lot of those behaviors from being in the household with those parents that wanted to pretend like everything was good when in real life they knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important that you mentioned that, because I've noticed that I grew up Jehovah's Witness, mm-hmm, and you're supposed to be the saint of saints.
Yeah,
but then at home, my parents, I don't think they ever did anything physical. Like, never, I never seen it. However, with the verbal stuff, like mount in each other's face and finger pointing and all this stuff, and I've seen it.
Yeah.
And when my mother was very physical and mentally abusive, like whatever was happening for her, then she would like take it on the kids and all this stuff. And it would, as you mentioned, like behind closed doors, or they act like the kids don't know. I saw enough that when I became of age, I left the house and I stopped being Jehovah's Witness, because I was just like, I'm not some stupid cardboard who's on the floor. Like, they say kids are to be seen and not heard. I've seen it all. And when I was in my teens, I would ask questions and they would beat me up for asking questions. And I'm like, I'm trying to understand this. Like, why are you doing this or saying this, but you're doing differently?
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to criticize. It's not a criticism. I'm in a different state of growth and mental. I'm trying to understand life. And so I had to unlearn a lot of BS. And it's sad when they could have been the one who guide me. And it's like, it's part of life. I'm had to unlearn and learn new things, but it's what it is.
I'll tell you, number one, you're doing a great job of it. So you're a dope person and your smile is immaculate. So you're doing a great job at it. The second thing is just to kind of tie into your point, that I think especially in households in which religion is pushed hard, it misconstrues things for kids, because not everyone now, but a lot of those people do exactly what you just said, and where they're in church and they're like, oh yes, church, godly, Jehovah Witness, all whatever your religion is, and they're praising and they're doing all of that, and then they're coming home and they're being a completely different person, right?
Very violent.
So what happens is, as a kid, we're trying to like process all of these things and we're not able to process them. So what we do is ask questions. And in those type of religious settings, it's so frowned upon for a kid to ask questions and to be inquisitive and all of that, that they end up lashing out more. And that's why, to me, in my personal opinion, you see a mass exodus of religion and church. You see a lot of people going non-denominational because they know what the hell was going on at home, right? They know that mom and dad or whoever at church, they acted one way, but when they were home, it was this way. And because we weren't allowed to ask those questions, because I was in the same type of environment, because we weren't allowed to ask those questions, we grew up having to unlearn a lot of the things that we subconsciously downloaded.
Yeah. Or even worse, I've spoken to a lot of people who end up doing drugs and they got, unfortunately, they got with the wrong crowd and they were sold into prostitution.
Yes.
And then their parents will be like, see, you went to the devil and all this stuff. And I was like, no, it's simple, but it's difficult like that. Like, you cannot just tell someone to don't do this. And then you just beating them down or being violent physically or mentally. And then when they don't have the support where they're supposed to get either in church or at home, and then they're doing the drugs because they don't know how to cope. And you're just going to tell them there's the devil. Like, we need to take responsibility for either ourselves. Yeah, those children did it. They need to take responsibility. But at the same time, where is your responsibility?
Absolutely.
Where is someone under the age of 18 and you just blaming the devil? Like, I feel like, as you mentioned earlier, I am more spiritual than doctrines, because doctrines, I feel like it can help certain people. But because of the way my mind works, I need to take responsibility. I'm not a robot where I'm just going to follow things and it works for me. I question. Yes. I have logic and I question. Yes. So it cannot work for me. It's too rigid, because if someone says, just like I've also studied, because I love religious studies. And the way I study a religion is beside learning either online through books, then I take the experience and go in there. So I was studying Mormons, and then I went to the church and I experienced it. And I was just like, I was like, okay, it's kind of like most other religions I've studied. I was like, well, how can you saying this, but then if it doesn't happen, like one thing I've noticed a lot, and of course, probably many religion, but just like a quick story is, let's say if someone is, they feel it and they know it, and there is that spectrum I've noticed with sexuality. And if that person is like, cannot be with a woman, period, like it will just kill them in their brain. And then how can you tell that person, in order to go to heaven, they need to have a wife? And then people have done it and they have many children. And what does happen in their 50s and 60s? They have a mental breakdown, like what's that thing called? Midlife crisis. And they come out anyway. And then their wife feels devastated. How could you lie to me for 50 years? And their children is like, how could you leave my mom? And it just ruins. And then everyone have trauma.
Yes.
But if that person just like lived who they were, whatever religions can label it as sinful or whatever it is, but then they would leave that woman to be with a straight guy, and they could have their children, and of course they would have other traumas, but that trauma wouldn't be a thing, because everyone fell into place where they needed to be.
Yes.
I've seen that so much, and I'm just like, it's so sad, because how does a man, let's say with six children in his 60s, like, he's like, I'm going to die. Where am I going to live my authentic self? So he has to choose between himself and six children and a wife, because he's done it for 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And most people cannot, most people don't have the empathy or the compassion or the unconditional love. They'll be like, oh, you're an asshole. How could you live your wife and children and to be yourself? Like, how could you?
It's so backwards, man, right? Like, it's just like, it's so backwards. But I think I just got to chime in and tell you, like, you're onto something. This religion, the religion stuff, nowadays, in my personal opinion, when you stick too much to a particular religion or to the Bible or whatever you read, and it's like when you're very rigid, like you said, when you're very rigid, it fosters those type of reactions, right? Where somebody's like, okay, I don't want to go to hell, so let me just pretend that I'm straight and that I'm going to marry this woman and we're going to have all of these kids. But really on the inside, that person is dying because they're not, like you said, being their authentic self. And I take it a step further. Like, if people really want to challenge stuff. So you're telling me that God would rather have this person live a lie, right? Not be who they truly are as his child, than to pretend and do all of these things. Like, that's what we're telling people.
And
like,
we rather other you hide human yourself. Beings.
Yes. Yes. Like, yes. Like, so that's what we're telling people. And usually when I get in conversations like that with religious people, they shut up because it's like, oh yeah, yeah. God probably would not want you to hurt more yourself and more people as opposed to just living your truth.
Yeah, or even with cheating, which is a question I had for you about that later on. And even with the cheating stuff, like some people, we all seen it, where they have to do the cheating part mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they feel they're in prison.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah. So, but I want to ask a question now, and I'll leave it to that. Okay, so I ask about the same-sex couples or mom and dad because mm-hmm. I've seen a lot, which I am pro. I'm not against things, but I'm more like pro things. And if mm-hmm. I feel like I'm against something, I need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And because of law of energy and positivity, I'm not against mm-hmm. stuff. I rather work with things. I rather yeah. collaborate and grow instead mm-hmm. of be like, because against is like fighting and there's all this nasty emotion. So I rather like collaborate. But anyway, mm-hmm. So I do believe, I'm very grateful that I was raised with a mother and father. And I heard that they separated when I left the house. So they were waiting. And I'm very grateful for that. But as you mentioned, like, it's not to each their own. Like, you know your situation. Yeah. If you're a battered wife or husband, you know mm-hmm. you cannot stay for the children. But I think every situation is different. But I'm grateful that my absolutely. Parents stayed together because I was able to experience that. And they have 7 children. And I'm the last one. Mm-hmm. So that was tough. And I've seen a lot where a father is important in the child's life and mm-hmm. the mother is important in the child's life. And as mm-hmm. we've seen, and especially in the, well, we're Black, so we can talk about that for us in the Black yes. community where the mother takes the role of the father and the father, mm-hmm. I mean, the mother takes the role of the father and the mother. Because I feel like, of course, they have to. It's like, mm-hmm. and if mm-hmm. the father not staying around, but I feel like let's say it's 50-50 because sometimes the mother is impossible mm-hmm. or sometimes mm-hmm. the father is impossible. Yeah. Either the father don't want to be around or the father mm-hmm. leaves. And sometimes people don't want to talk about the mother is impossible, just like, or any human being who's like with the communication or interaction is impossible to be with. So yeah. it makes, and then the children just in the middle and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And so yeah. I've even seen that with my sister was different because like she would fight with the fathers, but then I don't think she's the impossible person where she always wanted them to be in the children's life.
More and involved.
Yeah. But in that story, they're the ones who didn't want to be around. So that's different. Mm. But I've seen where the other part where the father wants to be around and the mother was like, use the children as collateral. So yeah. my question is, if there's two fathers, yeah, they have father things, but there's not that human mother things that a child need, or yeah. they only have one mother or two mothers and they don't have that father thing. Like how important, because I know it's important to have different sex parents, but I don't know if you know what I'm getting at, like because I've
seen, yeah, I like, how important are you balance. Trying? How important it is to have a balance? What you're essentially saying is it's important to have a balance of energies in the house, no matter who
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's important to have a balance of energies in the house. So having that masculine energy, but also the feminine yeah. energy in yeah. the house as well, to create a balanced child. And yeah. I think that's absolutely pivotal. I'm just gonna keep it real with you. I yeah, think one of the biggest detriments to our community as Black people is the fact that we don't think co-parenting is a way to be successful. I think that is such a detriment to us. and not having fathers involved or not having mothers on the same page, I think it's the worst thing that we could possibly do in the Black community, especially when I'm doing work outside of the Black community. And that's all I see other people doing, right? Like, white people could literally hate each other guts, but when it comes to the kids, they're going to do exactly what they need to do, right? They're both going to show up at the basketball and football games. They're both going to be supportive in band practice or dance lessons or whatever it is. Like, they're both going to show up, right? Even though they hate each other's guts, they're going to show up and be present for the kid. With our community, I don't see that. Like, I'll see either a father at a game or a mother at a game, and that'll be it. Like, and it's not, I don't think people realize how detrimental that is to the kid and how it limits their development not to have both parents present cheering them on and being able to put their emotions to the side. So, yeah, I think it's so two parts to the question. Number one, I don't think you necessarily need a man and a woman in the house. It's more important to make sure you're mindful of the energy. You're balancing that masculine energy with the feminine energy. However you figure that out within your relationship, that's very personal to you all, but it's very important to get it figured out. But yeah, I really think it's to have two people on the same page, even if they're not in the same home, that is how you create the most successful kid.
And I've noticed a lot of people don't ask the children what they want.
No, and that's where I try to be very proactive when I'm working with couples that don't get along or parents that don't get along. I try to be very proactive with talking about resentment, because that's where the resentment comes into play, right? That resentment can be so cancerous that it can blind you, right? Yeah. What we should be thinking about in this situation is what's best for our child. But since we had such a toxic relationship, all we can think about is what's best for us. Or like, I even have friends that do this. Like, oh my God, I don't want to call my baby mom, or I don't want to be around my baby mom because this is, and I'm like, yo, what are you talking about? That sounds stupid. That sounds selfish. And it should be about the kid, right? And I think that when you're in a relationship for a long time and things don't turn out the way that you wanted it to, that's where resentment comes into play. And then usually if it's a long lasting relationship, you have kids involved. So that's where it becomes very difficult to ask the kids what do they want out of the situation.
So what is the Quality of Love podcast about?
The Quality of Love, it shifted a couple of times. Originally, when it started, I wanted to give information and to answer questions on relationships. It eventually morphed very quickly into what now the Quality of Love essentially is. It's a podcast where I answer relationship questions as well as questions about narcissistic individuals. So people will send me questions to my email about like, hey, do you think I'm in a relationship with a narcissist because they're doing this, that, and the third? And then I'll just come right on the podcast every Tuesday and I'll answer their questions. And so it that narcissist thing it's taken off and developed a kind of a life of its own, because narcissist is a buzzword. But I think it's important to, like, you'll hear it a lot, said a lot, even misconstrued a lot, to be frank with you.
Yeah.
Cause I hear people say it now and I'm like, that is not a narcissist. Like, that's a normal person that just wants to be successful in life.
It's something trendy. I've noticed when Trump became president, like, it became like a word now.
Yes. They call it a buzzword. They call it a buzzword. Yeah. So now it's like, oh, this is a cool word. So, and most people that use it don't know what it is.
Yeah.
A narcissistic individual is a very specific person who tries to isolate you from your social support network. So they don't want you having friends, family support, and is generally self-absorbed. So they want you to put them on a pedestal. They want you to constantly build them up. But at the same time, what they do is they keep you down, right? So when you bring up your needs and you acknowledge that you have needs in a relationship too, they're dismissive of it. That is not, that's that sometimes relationships are just not successful. And then people will be like, oh, well, they were a narcissist. And it's like, no, they weren't really a narcissist. I'm sorry. It just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. So I try to point people in the right directions, man. And so far I've been extremely successful and I'm extremely blessed and thankful, because if it hadn't been for COVID, I wouldn't even started the Quality of Love.
Yeah. Yeah. 2020 has, at least for me, and I think we're the same path of like positivity and also use what life gives us and going with the flow of life. Yes, so yeah,
absolutely. You have to be flexible, man. Life is crazy.
Yeah. If you're rigid, you're gonna break just like anything.
Yeah, that's what it is, man. Especially nowadays, people are so different.
Yeah. So what does a relationship coach do, or what do you do as a relationship coach, like in the details of things?
Yep. So essentially what I do is I try to create shortcuts for people in relationships. Most people don't know about things like love languages, as we talked about before, which is it's a way to communicate to your partner so that they feel it. Again, going back to that feeling and not just hearing what you're saying. So when you know your partner's love language, you can communicate with them in a more effective way. So in most cases, I'm always talking about love languages. A majority of my clientele are Black. So, you know, we don't know anything about like love languages and apology languages. But none of that. We just be going with emotions. So a majority of my clientele are Black. So I that's something that I introduce to them. It usually is relatively enlightening. But there's also apology languages that I introduce to them as well, where it's not only talking about how to love on your partner, but it's speaking on how to say sorry to them in a way that they'll actually feel it and not just be like, yeah, whatever, you said that last time. Kind of.
Why you keep bringing that up?
Yep. That's that. You know it, man. You know it, man. So those two things are probably what I do most. Then there's also this concept of a non-negotiable list that I came up with a couple of years ago that I think has really taken a life of its own. And the idea of a non-negotiable list is when you're dating, or if you're in a relationship now, you can do it too, but you create 10 things on a list that you will not accept at all in a relationship. Right. So my very first non-negotiable list was like, I'm not tolerating disrespect. Like, so if you start cussing at me, telling me I'm not this, I'm not that, I don't measure up to anything, I'm automatically, I can't even be in a relationship with you, like, because you're messing with my mojo then at that point in time. Another thing was cheating, of course. I have to have my needs met. Just a list of 10 things that work for you specifically. And then you set the non-negotiable list to the side, give it about a week or two, come back to the list. If you look at that list in a week or two and it's still the same, or you still feel the same way, that's your non-negotiable list. So now every person you interact with, every single person you date, you, matter of fact, I'd say choose to allow into your world, because really you're in control. And I hate when people give control to other people. So it's your world, it's your universe. So whoever you allow into your world and your universe, if they don't measure up or they don't add up to your non-negotiable list, that's somebody you have to get rid of. Like, that's somebody you can't waste time with, or you can't waste energy with, because eventually down the line, they'll end up screwing you over. Maybe not necessarily in an overt way, but in a way that you feel like, damn, I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I say all the time when it comes to relationship coaching is I invite people to do every 3 months, do a relationship inventory. And when I talk about a relationship inventory, that's literally, I'm talking about write down or type, jot down, whatever, put it in an Excel sheet if you have to, but put a list of all your close relationships down, right? So mom, dad, whoever, sister, brother, siblings, name them all, put them all down. And every 3 months you have to look at this relationship and say, okay, is this relationship a mutually beneficial relationship or not? Right? So am I getting out what I'm putting into this relationship? If you are, if there's reciprocity in that relationship, cool, this relationship can keep going. If you find out like, okay, wait, maybe I'm not calling this person enough, or this person isn't calling me enough, or they're not checking in on me as like they used to, then that's somebody you want to be mindful of and kind of put them to the side and don't give them so much of your energy and time.
Wow. So two things I was getting as you're speaking, it circles back to communication and the feeling, communicate with feelings and like, I feel you kind of thing. And also it sounds, I mean, I feel you. I get what you're saying because I practiced it. But it sounds like for someone, like when I wasn't there, or the regular person, sounds like a lot of work. But it is, and it needs to be.
Yes.
It's like that word ironic. Like, yeah, like, because we know as human interaction, if you don't actually do the work that it needs to have, you're going to have fights and resentment and fights.
Yeah.
But if you do the work, which is, I think it's only painful because of ego, really. Yeah. Because yeah. it comes down or to it's all ego.
Yeah. You know what else, then it's tough to what I found, and I believe this to my heart. You hear people saying that public speaking is the biggest fear. Public speaking is the biggest fear that ever. I think that's wrong. Change is the biggest fear that people have, right? People are scared to change, right? So what happens is when you do the work that we've done on ourselves, that shit is a lot, man. And it's like,
I know you
felt it yourself. You felt the change. You've had to change from one space in life to a completely different space in life. Most people don't want to do that, man. Most people are afraid to go from here to there because now who am I when I get over to be here, right? Mm-hmm. Who do I become now that I'm challenging all of my old belief systems, all of my old ways of thinking and ways of doing? Now that puts me in this box over here. Oh shit, I don't know that box over there. I'm used to this box over here. So let me just stay in this box over here.
Yeah. And because once you know better, you do better, people don't want to do better. So they rather not know better.
Because you know why? Because it takes effort to do better, right? It takes, you got to put in effort. And frankly, man, a lot of people lazy. Keeping it real. A lot of people are lazy. They don't want to do that level of work. So they're like, man, forget that. I'm just going to stay hanging out on the corner. I'm going to keep cheating and womanizing and doing all of these things that they don't enhance your quality of life.
Yeah. So tell us about Trauma Bond.
Yes. Trauma Bond that's another big buzzword that you hear coming around, but it's true. I really do believe that what happens is when we talk about trauma bond, people bond from this having similar traumatic experiences. And because of their similar traumatic experiences, they'll stay together. Right. And I'll share a story with you that recently happened that kind of it put me on my toes like, dang, like this is crazy. There was a couple in the relationship, a man and a woman. And in both of their relationships, their father was abusive to them. Right. So when they would get into arguments, they would say, oh, you're just going to abuse me like my dad used to. Right. And they would literally say this to each other. And that was the crux of their bond. Right. They literally bonded based off of their father being abusive to them. And they begin to display some of those same patterns like that. The subconscious patterns that were given to them, they started displaying those same and subconscious patterns. And frankly, I had to stop working with them because they weren't willing to do the work. So I had to pass them off to another good relationship coach that I think can help them out a little better than I can. But when we talk about trauma bond, people stay in lasting relationships based off of trauma bonding. And that is one of the most unhealthy things that you can do, in my personal opinion.
Yeah. I didn't know about trauma bonding until I got in that, and I thought it was falling in love. And this is why, at least for me, I'm a researcher. I don't have a degree, but as human being, I love learning.
Yes.
And especially firsthand experiences, when that happened to me, I learned what falling in love is and what it isn't. And I was like, oh, and then I learned I felt in trauma bonding and it wasn't love. Yes. And then I had to learn what depression was. I never experienced depression until 2020.
Wow. Like,
I know it sounds crazy, but when I experienced it, I was confused.